it's a delight, almost unparalleled, actually, to be able to welcome now to the Siren Airwaves and, of course, the Midweek Drive, a gentleman who, if he's not already in the legendary status, pretty shortly will be, because he's actually a classic example of a polymath who's moved from law into being senior vice president at Warner Brothers, a consultant producer on a number of fantastic movies and so on. We say those magical words, Rick Sennett, are you indeed there?
I am here, and I love the showbiz introduction. It's the greatest film ever made, well, as Jack Warner used to say.
Precisely so, exactly. Now, just share with us, Rick, a little bit of your own personal CV, because we talked about, obviously, you doing a legal background, which is obviously useful in all sorts of ways. How did you actually, back in 1970, decide that, yes, okay, these flickering images that come on the screen that sort of have a magical world that creates their own sort of magic, that's where I want to be?
Actually, the decision was probably taken many, many years before that, because like an enormous number of people that I know who work in their business, their entire education seems to have come either through the cinema or through the theater. And although I probably did learn a thing or two at school and university, I wanted to go into the movie business or into the theater world from a very early age. And I didn't quite know what that meant, like most people aiming at any kind of career. You don't really know what it means. All you know is that you like it. I liked going to the cinema. I liked going to the theatre. I liked acting. I liked the whole mystique around it all. I found it all quite glamorous. So by the age of 17, when I was doing my A-levels and really not knowing what I was going to do next, I announced to my parents that I was going to go into the entertainment business. Oh, was the kind of reply, and with a bit of negotiation, we decided between us that I would study law, which was a sensible thing to do, and when all else failed, as it was bound to in the entertainment world, that I would have something reasonably steady to fall back on.
And, of course, there is that line, which we've alluded to in the past, with other legal bods who've made that crossing over, that allowing for the role of the barrister and Rumpole of the Bailey and so on, there's a lot of theatricality, even Perry Mason, dare I say it, which in terms of that legal profession, you could say, well, you were simply feeding the fuel of interesting things. It's not just ten angry men and so on, just men that's coming across here.
I think there's no question that that's correct, and that films like Ten Angry Men are just inspirational in a sense, and they make you even more ambitious in an area which is totally fraught. So yes, that's exactly right. You've really put your finger on it. You've got it.
Senior Vice President Business Affairs Europe is one of those wonderful titles which one often sees in Screen International. You think, yes, this is very good, etc. Was this a case of Hollywood saying, well, we need somebody over on the other side of the pond? Rick, you're the best person for the job.
No, not at all. The expression business affairs was something that was alien to me when I first heard it. I had already made tentative steps in the film industry, learning the language of the film industry and working as an assistant to a producer-director way back in the early 70s. When I came across somebody that actually had that job title, he was head of business affairs for Universal in London, and I thought, wow, this is cool. Or I don't think one said cool in those days, but that's what I thought. I'll have to find out what he does, and I did. And I discovered that business affairs was an entire profession in the entertainment industry in the States. And I fairly quickly worked out that in the film industry, it was biased towards the legal side of the business, intellectual property and the likes, negotiating contracts and stuff like that relating to film and film distribution. Whereas on the music side of the industry, it was more related to accounting and that profession. And so when I'd heard about this fellow working in London for a big American company, I thought that was really just a dream job. And at that stage, I had not actually qualified as a solicitor. So I worked in the United States, came back to the UK, absolutely convinced that with all my US experience, I was God's gift to the film industry, which of course was a huge mistake, and I wasn't God's gift to anybody, as it turned out, decided that I'd qualify as a solicitor, which I did at that stage. Then I did my articles, as you had to do in those days, in order to become a solicitor, and walked into the job at Warner Brothers the following day, which was as an assistant to the head of business affairs of Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers, obviously synonymous, certainly, with the gangster movie, and indeed in later years, Batman, Blade Runner, a variety of other packages that have come through within that whole field and the sort of milieu of the gangster. Horror tends to be associated with Hammer, unless you exclude, of course, On the Buses and various other sort of scenarios that they used to do in the comedy fields. Just before we move on to Warner Brothers, and in particular a fantastic event that's taking place next week here at the University of Lincoln, the Hammer horror scenario, was it a time, I mean, clearly it's undergoing something of a resurgence now. Many folk within the business, certainly many actors, mourn the passing of Hammer. Recently, of course, we lost the legend that was Ingrid Pitt, who passed on to the great Hammer studio in the sky. But was that a particularly enjoyable time being in charge of Hammer? Was it an interesting shift? Because clearly you're going from a very multinational company in terms of Warner's through to very much a British company.
It was very interesting, and that came about because Warner Brothers, long before I got there, had financed some famous Hammer titles, Dracula and Frankenstein, the 1958 Dracula, and the company was in private ownership. Towards the end of my tenure at Warner's, I was approached by the gentleman that owned the company at the time, Roy Skeggs, and asked if I'd be interested in putting together a proposal for a separate entity to acquire the company. And I was very, very interested in that for a couple of reasons. First of all, Hammer is a great, great name, and although I'm not a huge horror aficionado, I certainly appreciated its place in British film history, in fact, in world film history. But more to the point, it was a brand, and the big brands like Disney, like McDonald's, these brands don't find their way into private ownership very often, so it was a real opportunity to make something of it. The acquisition took place a couple of years later, I would say, and I was still involved with Warner Brothers, but I'd already made the decision to move on. At least that's how I remember it. And what you buy when you buy a company like that is a collection of different rights, different movies. You have, of course, given the great trivia clue there by mentioning On the Buses. Of all the films that Hammer made, although many are more famous, On the Buses was one of its most successful. And that is quite intriguing when you look at a catalogue of films like Hammer, several hundred films and television programs, to look through, see what the rights position is on all of those titles, which, by the way, is hugely complicated and a very difficult thing to tidy up a company of that age, which did have some issues historically, and probably still does, but that's what it was all about. It was very interesting, had some very interesting partners in the business, and we all loved it.
It clearly demonstrates the strange power of Reg Varney.
But it certainly does.
People don't necessarily, when they think about the Hollywood greats, the Bogarts, the Bacalls, the Jimmy Cagneys, etc., think Reg Varney, but there we are. It's an interesting line.
And I must just mention dear old Ingrid Pitt, or dear young Ingrid Pitt, as she always was. Mm. She was a real star in many respects. The sweetest lady you could ever meet, and she'll be sorely missed.
Absolutely. I know we worked a number of times with Madeline Smith, who, of course, was part, I hesitate to use the term, of a twin spearhead in one of Miss Pitt's scenario, but I think we'll just move on to that. Now, we mentioned, obviously, this Wednesday, a fantastic event that's taking place. We're very fortunate, certainly in Lincoln, not just at the University of Lincoln, to be able to see Warner Brothers, An Illustrated History. This is a fantastic opportunity, really, for people to get a I mean, whether you're a cineast, whether you're somebody who's actually looking to work within the business, networking opportunities are actually there, just actually getting a flavour of the way in which, really, over the last century, the Warner Brothers studio has developed. And that studio side of things is sometimes which... Oftentimes people say, oh, we don't have this. It's not the days of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Louis B. Mayer and the Universal and you know, it's all run by multi-glamorate, faceless conglomerations and corporations now. Certainly in Britain, we often say, no Lou Grade. Where are the next Lou Grades who would actually just simply say, forget the focus groups, just make the show, make the movie? What can we look forward to in this illustrated history of Warner Brothers?
I set out, when originally working on the idea of a series of lectures, of taking the entire history of the company and looking at it from a business affairs perspective rather than just a history. I'm not a historian. I'm not a film critic. And I felt that there was a story to be told, mainly for the Warner Brothers staff, who are all much younger than me and hadn't had the advantage that I've had of a job that gave them an overview of the way that the company worked, and over a very long period of time, in my case 25 years at Warner Brothers, learning the history of how the company came to be what it is today, how the rights got there, how the films got made, and the way that the business was all put together. And so I went on a little adventure, as it were, and went right back to the beginnings of the studio, which, of course, is four individuals that put it together, the four Warner Brothers. And I really started tracing it from their European origins, which, when you start looking at a company from that perspective, you discover that the way in which the whole thing is put together is very different from any other type of business. Now, each business, I'm sure, has got its own characteristics, but the movie business is very special because it's cultural and commercial at the same time. I took that history through, and by the time that we'd got up to date to Harry Potter and the internet, and we'd covered the family relationships and the way that the business grew, I discovered that actually I was writing something else as well, not entirely different, all connected. And it was really your Professor Brian Winston that explained to me what I'd done, because I couldn't quite understand it.
He's very good at that, Brian.
Oh,
he does that.
Absolutely. He explained that really I'd done a number of things on different levels, and one of them was to explain how little family business becomes a huge multinational business, and how the what today are referred to rather disparagingly as the suits, the gentlemen who put it all together, who could be tough and difficult, but really were immensely talented, with huge ambitions, took huge risks, and created something really quite marvelous that has, in effect, just changed the world that we lived in then, and in many respects has a huge impact today.
Of all of the Californian towns in all of the worlds, this was the one that they landed in, to paraphrase Casablanca in many ways. It's extraordinary. And, of course, moving on from that, the way you move through the opening sequence from the Nickelodeon period, Rin Tin Tin, on to, of course, Harry Potter, which is, again, an associate. I mean, I did say glibly that you used to have a kind of classic scenario that, you know, it was shorthand, admittedly, but Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, you'd usually have a happy ending. You'd usually have musicals coming out of that particular side of things and so on. Warner Brothers, as I said, usually connected with this sort of gangster scenario. Things have kind of crossed over a little bit more, and things have has been a blurring of the edges. As we sort of are in the second decade of the 21st century, and we hear a great deal about convergence, and yet at the same time we still have the celebration of film and you know, the often mooted demise of the film industry keeps rearing its head, etc. Is the film industry in a healthy situation? I mean, for somebody who's actually saying, I've got the same kind of beliefs and thoughts that you had back in the sort of the 70s and so on, in the 60s, wanting to work within the industry. Is it still a case of, well, actually, the opportunities are there, you just have to look for them and create the whole notions yourself?
I think using the expression the film industry is a little bit misleading in some respect. It's the only expression that we've got, so you're quite right to use it, but it can be a little bit misleading. Film industry is made up of many, many different sectors, many professions, and many different ways of being successful. And the way that rights are exploited means that a film can be unsuccessful in one place and very successful in another, in one medium in one place and a different medium in another, and can still be successful overall, even though it may actually not recoup its original investment before the original financier. That's the complication of the way that the industry works. But many things seemingly are completely different from the way that they were, but many things actually are rather much the same. Ren 10 10 was a franchise for the Warner Brothers. Each of the studios were looking for their own franchise subject way back in the 1920s. And they made lots of Rin Tin Tin movies, more Rin Tin Tin movies than Ernst Lubitsch movies. And today, what are the studios all looking for? Franchise pictures. Batman, Superman, Lethal Weapon, you name it. I happen to be referring to Warner Brothers titles, but all the studios are.
Sadly, as the recent ceremonies have actually mentioned, that The Last Airbender is unlikely to go to the quadrilogy it was originally mooted for, after obviously being the recipient of a Razzie Award. There we are. I think they were one of the worst movies ever made. What's happened to M. Night Shyamalan? I don't know. Sixth Sense. It's a different line from that point of view.
He'll be back.
Exactly. Broadly speaking, just to draw things together, the event itself is going to be absolutely sensational. I hope to actually be there, certainly for the early part of the sequence. It's at the University of Lincoln MTech Centre on Wednesday. Rick, it's been an absolute delight just getting a flavour, and that's all we could really sort of ascertain in this particular area. I'll quote from Brian Winston's line that it provides you one with a unique multi-viewpoint overview and perspective of the Warner Brothers studio, which is absolutely fantastic. So we've got two final questions to throw at you present. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting link with us here on the Midweek Drive for Siren FM?
Oh, yes. Really delightful. Thank you.
So the next crucial question is, can we prevail upon you to hopefully join us again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of life, the universe, and obviously the importance of movies and productions and so on and so forth?
Just name it. Name the time and I'll be there.
Rick Sennett, we salute you. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.